And Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:17 on Friday, February 19th. With us today, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Kido, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one item on the calendar today, House Bill 304, tobacco and e-cigs tax. With us, we have Ken Alper in the room, Jerry Burnett, I'm thinking for backup. And Brandon Spanos is online as well. Or is he coming?
He's online.
He's online.
Yeah, he's online. And Jay Butler's
and
here.
And Dr. Butler is here as well.
Let's see. Where do you want to start? Oh, we've been joined by Representative Josephson as well.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. It's great to be here. Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I'm the Director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. Thank you for hearing House Bill 304. This is the governor's tobacco tax bill, cigarette and tobacco products, e-cigarettes and the like. We'll get into the details as we move along. The title is pretty straightforward. Like many of the other excise tax bills, some of them that you've seen in your committee, we're asking for electronic filing as well as relating to the taxes of cigarettes and tobacco products. And with one new wrinkle, we are trying to tax electronic cigarettes, which are currently under current law exempt from Alaska's tobacco tax regime.
Would that be only the ones with nicotine or all of them?
Mr. Chairman, it would be all of them. The language gets fairly precise. So long as it's not electronic marijuana product, because that's taxed someplace else. But yes. Unless it is declared to be a tobacco cessation product, if the FDA says that it's for the purposes of making you quit smoking, then you're exempt from the tax. But if you smoke it, inhale it through a electronic vaporizer thing, then it would be taxable the way our bill is written. So, if I may, that we've been taxing tobacco in Alaska beginning in 1949. There's always been two different taxes, one for cigarettes, the other on other tobacco products, in part because cigarettes are relatively uniform. They're all the same size, so you could put a flat tax on the unit, whereas the other tobacco products are everything from cigars to rolling tobacco to snuff. So we have to tie something to the value of the product, and it's generally a wholesale value tax. The other tobacco product, the non-cigarette tax, was actually repealed for 33 years, reinstituted in 1988, and at the time it was 25% of the wholesale price. In 1999, this was another time where the legislature was wrestling with budgetary shortfalls, of course. The other tobacco tax was raised to 75% of the wholesale price. That's for the tax as it stands right now. And to be clear, the OTP tax, other tobacco product tax, is entirely general fund revenue. Meanwhile, over on the cigarette tax, there's what you call a base tax that's been around the longest. That's 3.8 cents per cigarette. That goes to the school fund. That's a designated fund. And then there's what's known as the additional tax of 6.2 cents per cigarette. That is, again, split. 8.9% of it goes to the Tobacco Use Education and Cessation Fund, and the other 91 and change percent goes to unrestricted general fund. I see we're a little cut off in the bottom here. Sorry about that. I don't know how that happened. But what the proposal before you does is increases the so-called additional tax by 5 cents from 6.2 to 11.2. Now, if we go back that slide, you can see that the 3.8 and the 6.2, really this is a 10 cents per cigarette tax. You know, the fact that it's two different things going to three different places, that's an internal accounting measure. From the point of view of the person paying it at the store, it's 10 cents a cigarette, or practically put, $2 a pack. That's what the state tax is on cigarettes right now. It's $2 a pack, and we are looking to raise it to $3 a pack. By putting the increase on the other tax rather than the base tax, it means it's going to be mostly general fund. 91% of the increment that comes from this bill goes to the general fund. We're also looking, in the language cut off at the bottom of the slide, to increase the other tobacco product tax from 75% to 100% of the wholesale value. So that is a one-third increase in the tax rate from 75 to 100. We are, as I said in the introduction, adding electronic cigarettes to the tax on other tobacco products. When I said these things are not currently taxed, what that really means is the definition of other tobacco product is, as written in current statute, isn't broad enough to encompass this thing called electronic cigarettes. It's a relatively new innovation that there's large numbers of those. What we're doing is broadening that definition and then adding a new definition of electronic product to fit under it. We're also clarifying the definition of wholesale price. The problem with the wholesale definitions, we've had a series of appeals, some legal issues over the years, where people have claimed the value to be different, and we're trying to clean that up based upon the legal track record and create a statutory definition of wholesale price to address some past situations. And like all of our other taxes, we are going to require electronic filing. So I'm uncomfortable here. Why my slides are not working? Maybe if I did that here, and then I'm going to grow the there. Now I could see it a little better myself. So Alaska's tobacco taxes are higher than the United States average. We have the 11th highest rate of cigarette tax. And for other tobacco products, we believe we have the 8th highest percentage, but there are some different types of formulas that vary from state to state.
Some is that for the current tax?
As we have today. Some of the other states do other tobacco product that's tied to weight, for example, rather than value. So it's a little bit harder to come up with a metric, but best as we could tell, we're number 8 in the country for other tobacco products, number 11 on tobacco. If we were to pass this bill as written, if the legislature passes this bill, we would have the 5th highest cigarette tax in the country and the highest rate of taxation on other tobacco non-cigarette products.
This would probably be a good time to ask if you're familiar with what happened in New York.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not specifically aware of what you're
talking
about.
They raised theirs a buck a pack last year, and they were anticipating generating hundreds of million. They lost $400 million. They reached the burn point, and people were acquiring their tobacco places other than New York State.
Mr. Chairman, that is interesting. I'm curious the degree to which you have people going across the border to other states to untaxed areas. There's reservations in the area, or maybe some people just quit smoking. I'm curious what the crossover is among that data set. And I'm glad Dr. Butler's here, because I know his office has a lot of research on impacts on smoking habits related to the price of the product.
I believe some of it was by mail.
Mr. Chairman, we do have that condition occurring in Alaska. If you were to Google tobacco by mail, cigarettes by mail, you could find cigarettes. They'll ship to your house at $40 a carton. If you do that, and we catch you, you are susceptible to pay the tax under current law at the $2 a pack or $20 a carton level. And if you look at the record, the appeals record, or the outstanding delinquencies in our collections group and accounting and collections, a great bulk of them are small tobacco people who went and flew in their own cigarettes, and we found them and we refined them the difference over time. There's some pretty big ones too, where maybe one person brought in a bunch of cigarettes for a whole extended family, and 5 years later there's thousands of dollars worth of built-up taxation. Okay, now I've lost my ability to go from slide to slide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Albert, the investigation on those, is that done with the aid of the U.S. Postal Service or marshals or
through the chair, Representative Josephson? It's our own criminal investigations unit. I believe we get data submitted to us from national organizations. I'm going to call and phone a friend and ask Mr. Spanos to speak to that one, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Spanos, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, we do receive information from distributors. They're required, when they ship product into the state, to notify the state. Of course, the online shippers, especially if it's international, do not notify us, so we do have to use other means. That has historically been most of the collections that Mr. Alper was referring to have been through court cases. So if there's a large distributor, internet distributor in another state, and maybe multiple states sue that company, they're required to by the court to provide the records. We've received those records. That's what most of those assessments came from.
Mr. Spanos, could you read yourself onto the record, please?
Yes, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director for the Tax Division.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So I'm just sort of curious how much you spend to collect money from some guy who's ordered, a package of cigarettes over the Internet.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the criminal investigations unit within the Department of Revenue does a lot of different things, of course, and we don't parse out their time to that degree. They bring in more than it costs them, and to a certain extent, there's a deterrent factor in all of this. But in addition to tobacco cases and other excise people trying to avoid taxes, those are the same people chasing after permanent fund fraud, child support issues, that kind of thing. But the people who are avoiding tobacco taxes is an interesting subculture, and we have a lot of anecdotally a lot of interesting cases of things that people have done. There's tobacco that's tax-free because it's sold at sea on ships, but then you'll get the captain might be smuggling back into town and selling it in the town, and we catch him. That's another. It's an interesting industry, to say the least, Mr. Chairman.
I think it's worldwide.
Yes. So how much money are we talking about? About $29 million is the revenue impact from the bill before you. That is slightly less than 1% of this year's budget deficit. Is by no means the one that's going to solve the problem, but it's part of the overall package. Within that $29 million, 24 of it comes from the tobacco increase. The bulk of our tobacco taxes come from and will come from cigarettes themselves. So that buck a pack is $24 million. Roughly speaking, that means about 24 million packs of cigarettes get sold in Alaska every year. That's a good little fact to have. Of that 24 million, 22 million of it will be general fund, and about 2 million will go to the education and cessation fund. And the other tobacco tax increase is about $5 million per year. That's also multiplied out from our existing tax. If you look at the fiscal note, the numbers tend to shrink in the out years. That's because the underlying tobacco use trend is down. As we look at who's going to be smoking 5 years from now, there are fewer Alaskans, fewer packs, and therefore fewer dollars.
Representative Hughes?
Yeah, back on slide 4, you had a base of the cigarette tax going to something called a school fund. Oh, okay, I see it. You're back on 4. So with the increase on 8, will some of that be going to school fund? And is that school fund can be used for any educational purpose? Because I noticed you have the separate cessation education piece. So the school funds for anything?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I'll start, and then we're going to call on Brandon again. The tax as structured in the bill before you is only to the additional tax. So it raises the 6.2 to 11.2, and that avoids the school fund issue. So the new money will be split between the general fund and the tobacco use education fund. How the school fund is actually used, I don't have direct knowledge of that, but I believe Mr. Spanos does.
Mr. Spanos?
Again, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director, Tax Division. And unfortunately, I'm not able to answer that, how those funds are used either. If I may, I was muted for Representative Ledoux's question, so if you're interested, I could follow up a little bit on that one.
Does this follow
up? Follow up?
If we could get that information as far as the school fund use, please.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, absolutely. I'm finding myself quite curious myself. I mean, it's not giant numbers, obviously. It's going to be, in current law, in the neighborhood of, I'm guessing, $15 or $20 million a year, but it's material, and I'd like to know what they're using it for.
And we have lots of time. I think we have a meeting scheduled at least twice next week, possibly all 3 days.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to be in this room a lot next week, aren't we? Yeah.
Most of us could be public testimony, I think.
I got in line one to answer Ledoux's question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Spanos wanted to ask.
Mr. Spanos, you wanted to address Representative Ledoux's question?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you'd asked how much we spend in relation to how much we collect. And I just wanted to note that under the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, we are actually required to make those assessments. That's the agreement that we entered into with the tobacco manufacturers. So they're trying to protect their interests, and so we agreed that we would diligently enforce that Master Settlement Agreement. And if we are found to have not diligently enforced it, then we lose the Master Settlement payments from the participating manufacturers.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Well, that still doesn't actually answer my question of how much it costs versus how much you get.
So through the chair, Representative Ledoux, correct. I shouldn't have said answer your question as much as make a comment about why we are so, why we're going after those accounts.
But, and Mr. Chairman, as you know, the state of Alaska gets a lot of money. This master settlement agreement is the multi-billion dollar settlement of old issues with the tobacco industry that's paying states throughout the country. There's big contracts underpinning that, and one of the requirements to get our share of that money is to diligently chase after things like untaxed cigarette use. So the revenue estimates we put before you were based on the 2015 fall revenue forecast. We are not ourselves contemplating changes in behavior from the increase. We already have an underlying decline in tobacco use built into the model. We are not estimating the amount of additional decline that will come from an increase. But we are also not accounting for the fact that there may be stockpiling. If word gets on the street that we're raising the price of a pack of cigarettes $1 on July 1st, it is possible that some Alaskans will go to the store in June and get a few extra cartons, and that's going to throw the numbers around a little bit, but ultimately those things even out a little bit down the line. We do not have any real data to estimate the revenue from the e-cigarette portion of this bill, so that's an indeterminate change. We know that they're out there. We know that it's growing. In Anchorage, there are some smoke shops that specialize in e-cig products, but we don't have any means of estimating the potential revenue from that industry.
Mr. Chair. Representative Jones.
Thank you. Mr. Upler, I know you're not a scientist, you're a tax director, but does the department take any position on the argument that e-cigarettes are first safe and second help wean people from tobacco?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the Department of Revenue does not have a position on that, and ultimately our task is to be silent on that. What we have in language, in existing language, is if something is declared to be a tobacco cessation product, and a classic example would be a nicotine-containing patch that people use to quit smoking, although that contains nicotine, we don't tax it because the federal government has said this is a tobacco cessation product. If the e-cig people can get that level of support to that claim, then they would not be taxable under Alaska law as we propose amending it here. And I would guarantee that Dr. Butler can have a more nuanced answer to that question.
Representative Hughes.
Just in tandem with that, I understand in England that they have now, I believe officially, and maybe Dr. Butler will speak to that, they've officially put it in the classification as a cessation device, I guess, since it's the equipment and everything. So I was just wondering if you were aware of that, if that was considered.
Representative Ledoux. Well, I guess I'll let you answer that.
The only answer, Mr. Chairman, to what Vice Chair Hughes said was, no, I'm not specifically aware of it. And the other reality on the e-cig side is, you know, whereas we are raising the tax on regular other tobacco products, cigars and the like, from 75 to 100, you know, we're proposing raising it on e-cigs from 0 to 100, right? We're bringing it under the umbrella while raising the tax. So this will be a substantial impact on that industry, which is growing. More and more people are using it. There's other legislation in this building attempting to make sure that children can't have access to it. Generally speaking, that says to me that people don't think of it as a health product. Right. But it's obviously an ongoing debate.
Representative Ledoux.
I don't want to be picky here, but this is the second presentation that I think you or your colleagues have given in which you say, on one hand, that it isn't going to change the consumption, so you're not figuring that into your analysis. And then I'm seeing here on page 13 that it says, impacts of tobacco tax proposal, slight decrease in consumption due to higher prices. If you don't believe that that's the case, because you said in, I think, both this analysis and on the alcohol analysis that it's not going to change the amount of revenue that's brought in because there's not going to be a decrease, why do you keep having it in your on your slides?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is an excellent question. Those slides were generated around the same time this bill. That bill was heard a little earlier. Really, that slide should say potential impacts, and then it would square that circle a little bit. We are not building them into our estimates. We are aware, our economists are aware, that when you tax something, you change the behavior around that thing. There's inevitably going to be some at the margins change. We don't have the means to estimate what that's going to be, so we're not building it into our modeling, but we know somehow that there is going to be an impact. When we start talking about, especially in tobacco, how much less tobacco is going to be consumed, the state has health costs associated with tobacco consumption. And there's modeling that could be presented to say how much can we save from having fewer smokers, even if we get less tobacco taxes, we'll save money on the health side.
Follow-up?
Yeah, was that the analysis that went into this before you did the slide? I mean, that sounds somewhat convoluted.
Through the chair, no. No, Representative Ledoux. We are calculating the money based upon our existing formulas and expectations of consumption and layering in this new tax. We are aware, at a second-order level of analysis, that it's likely there could be reductions in consumption, which would be hopefully more than offset by reductions in health care costs, but that is not in our modeling or in our fiscal note.
Going to follow up by saying maybe you ought to consider changing your slide.
Representative Hughes?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, when you decided to go from 0 to 100 with the e-cigs, whether you consulted perhaps with Dr. Butler or anyone in healthcare, because I've heard from some physicians that they're concerned because they've seen patients who haven't been successful using other cessation aids be successful with the e-cig. So just wondering if, I know your Department of Revenue, but and you're looking kind of at the end mark there, what revenue can it bring in? But was there consultation in health matters in regard to that? I know there's some physicians in the state concerned about it.
Through the Chair, Representative Hughes, we have consulted with Dr. Butler's office. We haven't discussed that specific issue. I mean, it's an issue that I was not aware of until we started having hearings on this legislation in the other body. It's something I want to know more about. It's a reasonable case. There might be a middle ground to be reached on e-cigs or not. I think I'd like to see that research myself, and I think you and the other members of this body should see that. If in fact e-cigs are in some ways less bad for you than other tobacco products, then let's make that case. I don't know.
Follow.
Are any other states taxing e-cigs at this point?
I don't know off the top of it. I believe so. I think this is a general trend of having to modify old language, Mr. Chairman. Brandon, do you know the answer to that?
Sorry, I was waiting to be unmuted, but perhaps I'm still not muted. Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director, Tax Division. Yes, other states are taxing it. Some are taxing it through statute. Others have chosen to do it through regulation by stating that unless a company can prove that the nicotine used in the product is not derived from a tobacco, that it is taxed. And I don't know those states off the top of my head, but we could get back to you with that.
I wonder if we get a list of those states sometime next week, if possible. Follow-up? Representative Ledoux.
So I've got two questions. First of all, when we talk about the electronic smoking component, so you're going to tax the entire kit, everything in it? Because I think those kits are actually relatively expensive. Are you going to just tax the thing that goes into the kit?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, thank you for asking a question here. I see from your version of the bill before you, you're inside the definition of electronic smoking product.
You're absolutely right.
And that is a definition that evolved substantially in recent weeks, which is why the bill before you is somewhat different than the bill that was introduced in the other body at the beginning of session. And this comes much closer to what the administration hopes to do. First off,
I just want to tell you I'm on 29GH2106/A.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the version of the bill before you, the House version of the bill, has the current language. The version introduced in the other body is a couple weeks older, and it was introduced at the beginning of session. This bill didn't come in until a little bit later. So the definition of the other body's bill was taxing the device itself. We did not want to tax the device itself because of the issue that you raised, which is that these devices themselves are, it's like taxing a pipe or an ashtray or a, you know, like, that's not our business. We're taxing the product. So what the intent is to tax the concentrate, the liquid that is smoked. Oftentimes those are sold as a refill, as a standalone product. However, we need to contemplate the circumstances where they're sold alongside other things. And that second part of the definition talks about if it's an integrated unit. Now, when I first learned about electronic cigarettes, I understood them to be the disposable ones that look like a cigarette. They have a little red or blue light that lights up at the end. There's a concentrate in there, a small battery, and when it's done, you throw it away, you buy another one. And that's that language about an integrated component that is taxed at the full rate. If you buy the device that you described, a $100 mouthpiece with a battery charger, that would not be taxable. However, if you buy that in a so-called starter kit that also includes a bunch of nicotine cartridges in it, then that whole kit would be subject to the tax, simply because we don't have the means of parsing out the kit into its partial value.
Follow up?
Burp same views.
My understanding that those kits, since you can't parcel them out, they run $70, $75, so it would be all of a sudden 100% tax, so we're talking $150 then for those kits?
Well, through the chair, Representative Hughes, I don't know when that kit sells for $75 in the store what the wholesale value is, which is what our tax is tied to. So it would be something smaller than that, but people only buy the kit once. It's really... You know, we want to make sure that what we really want to tax is the refill product, and those kits don't necessarily need to be sold as a kit. If it's just the delivery system, if it's just the mouthpiece, the battery, the charger, and it doesn't have any product in it, then we would not be taxing it.
Follow?
It's actually a little bit different, but along the same lines. I'm looking at the same version, page 5, at the definition, and I think you touched on this, but it says to deliver nicotine or other substances. So even if it wasn't nicotine, if the what's being purchased for the device isn't nicotine, you're going to tax that, or is it only if it's nicotine?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, in part because it's hard to say if something does or doesn't, and there's not requirements to say on the packaging. Yes, also the health issues are unsettled. People don't know if smoking chamomile through these things is necessarily good for you either. So the way the bill is written, we are intending to tax herbals, non-nicotine products, whatever it is that might be sold to be smoked through those products. The sole exception, you'll notice later in that definition, Mr. Chairman, there's a reference to 4361. Unless it's otherwise taxed under 4361, that's actually the marijuana tax statute. And in other words, marijuana, which is produced in state, manufactured into a concentrate in state, is already taxed through the marijuana excise tax by the time it gets to any e-cig, and we don't want to double tax that product by also then tax it through the tobacco statutes.
So Representative LeDoux, followed by Representative Josephson.
So how much additional do you think you're going to get through taxing these e-cigarettes, which seems to be a relatively controversial thing?
Through the chair, Representative LeDoux, we don't know. You know, anecdotally, talking among ourselves, guessing, looking at the size of the industry, the number of stores, the increasing amount of advertising, we think it's a $2 or $3 million line item. But I would not gamble my own money on that number.
That makes me feel confident.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, through the chair, is it possible to deliver marijuana through an e-cig kit?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. And in fact, some of the complexity that the states who've legalized and that Alaska is embarking upon in our own regulatory process is how much marijuana has evolved from the traditional smokable product that members might be more used to. I recall judiciary hearings from last year. There was a there was a jar of that liquid passed around, and Representative Ledoux said it was something that she'd never seen before. It was a very funny moment in gavel to gavel. But that concentrate, which you might was in that committee in a jar, could be put in these tiny little plastic capsules and screwed into these same e-cigarette delivery systems that you could use to smoke nicotine. Yes.
Representative Kathy.
That would be me, Kathy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I lost my train of thought now because I don't know who I am. So you're saying that you're not sure what the revenue would be, and I'm back on the e-cigarettes again. You're looking at a maybe $2 to $3 million revenue on a product that, and including the whole kit and everything, on something that could is potentially something that is actually better for people than cigarettes. So basically, taxing it out of existence, something that could help to reduce the smoking. I'm just a little confused.
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, certainly we're not trying to make social policy here. We have zero desire to tax anything out of existence. We're trying to find reasonable definition for how to tax an electronic smoking concentrate, a component that exists in many different forms, and it's a complex definition. I look forward to working with the committee to help craft better language. I've tried my best to state the administration's intent in trying to bring in this umbrella of products, but because it is it's a new product with a lot of unknowns, and because it's sold in different forms, it is an inherently complicated process.
Representative Kito, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Alper, I guess I am, based on this discussion, feeling like I have to make a comment. Nicotine is a drug. It's a highly addictive drug, and it's a highly addictive drug that suits its own purposes. It feeds itself. And we have found that out, and not only that, through tobacco products, it actually increases cancer, and through other means, it increases heart disease. We don't know what the long-range impacts of consumption of vapors is. And rather than thinking, we do have FDA-approved nicotine termination products out there on the market. If there is, at some point in the future, a FDA-approved vaporizing nicotine cessation item, it will be covered by this legislation. We've already said that in the legislation. What I do worry about is the same thing that happened back in the 1950s, 60s, 70s with cigarettes and advertising for children, trying to get people addicted at an early age, and then they become lifelong consumers. What I do know is increasing the taxes does increase the initial intake of new tobacco users or new nicotine users. So I do think it's very important for us, and maybe it's a little bit of social engineering, but it's important for us to protect our children from negative impacts in the future. And not knowing what long-term impacts of a vaporizing cigarette are, I'm more comfortable making sure that we are cautious up front, and then we can loosen up as we go down the road. So I just, based on what was the discussion, I felt like I had to make those comments.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Kito. You as the legislature are in a better position to make those kind of decisions than we are. What we view at the Department of Revenue was a loophole, that we have a new industry that's very close to an industry we're already taxing that is currently exempt from it due to some specifics in language that we're trying to unwind. Once we've made that decision, the more fine-level details are before you, and I hope to help you come up with the right way to solve it.
Representative Ledoux, followed by Representative Hughes.
You mentioned that you were going to tax herbal as well as the nicotine, and said that the reason for that is because you couldn't tell with the packaging. Every time I go and buy a product of anything, I mean, it tells me just about everything. I mean, how many calories, how many grams, I mean. So you can buy nicotine without it telling you that it's nicotine?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm going to ask Mr. Spanos again. He's much more familiar with the labeling requirements on tobacco products in Alaska and the sort of information that's generally made available to consumers.
Mr. Spanos.
Yes, again, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director, Tax Division. And Dr. Butler may even have more information than I do. But currently the capsules containing nicotine are not regulated by the FDA. They are not required to note that they have nicotine in them. The states that are taxing the product have found that the companies will often say that there is no nicotine in the product, and it is very difficult to test for it. But when tested, some of them have been found to indeed contain nicotine. And so I'm not sure what all the federal requirements are for the general products, but this particular product, apparently, there is no requirement for any labeling.
Thank you.
Representative Hughes.
On this, on that same topic, it is rather fascinating, this other substances, the fact that we could be taxing chamomile. I'm wondering whether you have a list of the other substances sometimes provided through these vapors, and perhaps the vendors will be able to attest to that, but I'd be curious what might else we might be taxing, the different types of herbs and other things that we would think of at this point, based on the science. We know that in other forms anyway, they're considered to be harmless, even healthy in other forms.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we will endeavor to come up with that list. I'm sure some of the menus from the e-cig stores in Alaska will be of use. We'll try to get a hold of those and bring them before you. In part because of what Mr. Spanos said in his last comment, without a labeling requirement, if we don't know that it does or doesn't, has nicotine or chamomile or anything in between, then if we're going to tax it, we have to tax all of it. An alternative mechanism may be to impose a labeling requirement, but I have no idea what the impact of that would be on industry. We're, after all, a relatively small component of a national market.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you. It's a new question, so is anybody ahead of me?
Nope.
Just wondering if we know when, is there an estimate as to when FDA is going to have more of a handle on this, and maybe Dr. Butler will have that information?
Yeah. Welcome, Dr. Butler. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. Good afternoon. Regarding FDA approval of an e-cigarette product as a cessation device, that would be up to industry to put that application together. The FDA does not go out and troll the pharmaceutical industry trying to find specific products. The industry comes to the FDA. From what I've been able to learn from FDA right now, there are no pending applications from the e-cigarette manufacturers in America. Regarding what has gone on in England, there is one product that has been approved by their regulatory authority that's equivalent to the FDA. So only one product. So that has opened the door, at least there, to that being used as a cessation product. There are certainly anecdotal reports that suggest that as a new method to deliver nicotine replacement therapy, e-cigarettes have promise. I have to admit the one example I could show you, I didn't bring it today, is something that was given to me by someone for whom it didn't work to help them quit smoking. They eventually quit smoking using other methods. But you're going to hear many anecdotes before all of this is said and done about from people who have tried other methods of quitting and not been successful until they tried e-cigarettes. You'll find many of them are now the vape shop owners because they really believe in the product now.
Follow up? Nope. Any further questions for Dr. Butler? At this point in time, at least.
Can I? Yeah.
Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we talked about the money we're going to bring in. We always have to talk about the money we're going to spend to do it. As you know, Mr. Chairman, we have a big new fancy tax handling system in the Department of Revenue. It works very well, but it requires reprogramming and work every time we make any changes to it. We estimate about $50,000 to do the reprogramming of both the internal keeping the data part and the forward-facing revenue online where taxpayers can pay their taxes through the Internet and register for their licenses, file their returns. We have to adjust the forms, test it, make sure everything works, make sure all the cells go to the right boxes, and that's going to cost a little bit of money. That's a one-time charge and certainly no anticipated additional staffing needs. The staff that currently administers the tobacco tax is doing a good job, and whether they're collecting $2 a pack or $3 a pack does not affect their workload terribly much.
Is the new system online already?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, yes. The so-called excise group, all of these taxes, alcohol, tobacco, motor fuel, passenger vessels, came online about a year and a half ago.
Are you running your legacy system at the same time still, or...?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so. If they are for any sort of residual record-keeping purposes, maybe Mr. Spanos could interject, but I'm fairly certain that no, they are not.
I see Jerry shaking his head, but what I'm leading into, we're not going to have a problem like we did with Hess on their new system, Xerox system.
No. Mr. Chairman, the problem we have is in too much data and trying to figure out what to do with it all. That's we should have worse problems.
Representative Hughes.
The electronic submission, it's set up, but this is requiring it, so some aren't using it, I take it now, and so this would require it. And then I have a question because I heard there was some legal issue as far as the fuel tax, and that was removed, I believe, in the Senate version. What was that about, and why was it considered a concern and removed in that?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I believe there was some difference of style between the administration, Department of Law's attorneys and the legislature's attorneys. I think there is intent to eventually revisit that issue as the motor fuel bill moves through the process. The intent is to have everyone file online, and then the issue is not so much about the requirement, but the mechanism of the waiver. That if we're going to say you don't have the technical means to file your taxes online and you apply for that, and then we give you a waiver, then everyone's fine. If you don't have that waiver, then we're imposing a $25 fine on you. I think they had some regulatory issues related with how that specific thing would be imposed. I don't recall the exact issues that were in that other committee.
So a follow-up. This language, I think, looks pretty identical, so we're going to have the same problem here then?
Through the chair, to Representative Hughes, the language is identical. It's written in Title 43, Chapter 5, which is the General Tax Administration statutes. It's not specific to the tobacco tax. If any one of these bills passes with it, that language would apply to all of our taxes. So the intent is, before we get to the finish line, to make sure that everyone is in agreement on how exactly to impose an electronic filing requirement. And this is, from our point of view, an adaptation to newer technology. We have better ability to handle this data. Right now, we have a staff of people who open the mail and do data entry and scan documents into the computer, and it's a process that we're hoping to phase out over the next few years.
New question?
It's a new question. So is somebody ahead in the queue?
No.
Okay.
Who's after you?
Representative Ledoux asked a little bit about chasing down somebody that might be bringing things in suitcases or mail ordering, and so wondering if because we're going up at really the high end, if there was any analysis done as far as how much that might increase that, how much that might impact local businesses and communities and jobs and putting added workload to law enforcement. Was there any analysis done as far as how that might impact the private sector?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we've certainly talked about those things. We have not done any economic analysis. We don't. I wouldn't even know how to start. There is, I suppose, a possibility there would be incrementally more of that sort of activity. The key there is always in the deterrence. If people are known to be getting $50,000 fines, then others might not want to do that sort of thing. And once again, if people bring in a carton of cigarettes from the duty free shop, that's not the issue. It's the people who create a side business of bringing in hundreds of cartons and selling them to their neighbors. Those are the people we're trying to chase after when we're trying to track down what the criminal investigations unit is looking for.
Again, I'll just a follow-up comment
follow-up.
On that. Just to say that, you know, it is troubling to me that you're only looking at the end game as far as trying to bring in money and not thinking about the impacts in the community and across the state. That's very concerning.
Representative Tilden, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the implementation of the cost, you said there's no additional cost to administer the program because an addition of $1 to a pack of something they're already covering doesn't take more to administer, which that makes sense. But you're planning on adding a whole other new section of taxation on a whole new industry or whatever you want to call that. So wouldn't that have some extra administration cost to that? And I guess that's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Tilden, that's an excellent question. And we do expect that the taxpayers will be largely the same group of distributors. You know, once again, we don't tax retail stores. We're taxing wholesalers, distributors of the product. There may be an incrementally larger number of taxpayers, people who are just in the vape supply business who aren't currently paying taxes, that might add a little bit of workload. We won't know that until we do it, and by that point we'll also know how much money we're bringing in, and if we find that we need another half a body to do that, and the state is talking about adding bodies, we'll come back in a couple of years. But right now we're not asking for anyone, and we're fully expecting we can absorb it within our existing staff.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Two distinct questions, if it's okay. First off, I think I heard you say that you're only looking at people who are doing this as a side business.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, no, we're concentrating on the people who we become aware of who are bringing in larger numbers of cartons. That's the sort of thing a larger number of carton person might be doing. But no, by no means is it exclusive to that. But people get into the general habit of smoking their cigarettes by mail, and over time, that does lead to tens, if not hundreds, of cartons of cigarettes.
All right, thank you. Second thing, it's my understanding that the demographics of smoking are such that higher income people tend to smoke less than lower income people. Is that your understanding also?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, this is something of a regressive tax to that extent.
That was my question.
Representative Tilden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in just a comment on Representative Ledoux's, the Alaska Tobacco Facts says that the lower socioeconomic status is three times the rate.
Ken, is this the same $50,000 for each of the tax bills, or is this aggregate for all of them?
Mr. Chairman, although the e-filing language is once, the little increments, the one-time increments, do stack up. Every one of them is a project unto itself. It takes a team of a couple programmers to dig into the code and resort things, build a new form, and a new form for tobacco is different than a new form for alcohol or motor fuel or the like. Those are a bunch of different $50,000 requests.
Okay, that clears that up. Representative Hughes.
Yeah, I don't know if it was going to be a separate presentation for Dr. Butler to talk about the impact of how he thinks it might affect health status, but I'd like to ask that question if this is the appropriate time.
I think probably after Ken gets done.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Should I continue with the next slide?
Yeah.
Okay. So members of the committee have all seen some version of this slide before and the slide after it. This is placing this bill in the context of the governor's broader fiscal plan. The FY16 budget all in on the general fund operating at capital statewide was $5.2 billion. We're trying to come towards that number. Should the Permanent Fund Protection Act pass, the one that moves the permanent fund around, the so-called sovereign wealth bill, that puts $3.3 billion in sustainable annual draw into the system. Alaska's other taxes, the ones that would not be run through the permanent fund with the passage of that legislation, add up in a typical year to $850 million. That includes the $40, $50 million we get from tobacco taxes today. savings and money that we'd be able to draw cash from on a sustainable annual basis would be another $135. Now we're a little over $4.3 billion. Now we need $1 billion to close the gap. The governor has proposed $500 million in spending reductions. That's a net $100 million operating cut in the budget before the body right now, plus the $400 million cut in the oil and gas tax credit reform bill that's in the Resources Committee. And then over to the revenue side, you can see where eight different bills that raise revenue stack up against each other, with the tobacco tax being middle of the pack. We see this as a $29 million item, with the understanding that really only about 27 of that is general fund. The other two would be going to that cessation fund. Out of the total of $457 million in proposed revenue increases by the governor, and should everything happen by the time everything got implemented, we've something like balanced the budget with a little over $5.2 billion effectively. Not seeing any questions. What are the impacts? This was the slide Representative Ledoux referenced before. We are making it more expensive to buy tobacco. I would prefer we had a potential or a possibility of, although we haven't considered it, we could see a slight decrease in consumption due to higher prices. That's straight up economic theory, supply and demand. You make something more expensive, people will consume less of it. And to a certain extent, stockpiling of cigarettes, filling up the cabinet before the tax rates go up. Oops, I went backwards. Let's try that one. Okay. Sectional analysis. Mr. Chairman, should I look at the sections of the bill?
Yep.
Okay.
You're on a roll.
Sections 1 and 2 are the electronic filing language. Those sections are identical in at least six different pieces of legislation in the body. The requiring of the submission is Section 2. That requirement also applies to license applications and other documents related to the tax. There's also a process to request an exemption. The typical person needing an exemption will have someone in a remote area, someone who doesn't have access to the Internet. We assume internally that this will more apply to the mining tax than it does the tobacco tax, where the distributors are companies that have offices in urban areas. The Section 1 is the penalty, 25% or $1 for failure to file electronically unless the exemption is received. You've got to have a little bit of a stick in there. Section 3 is conforming language. We have current language that says we share information about the tobacco tax with the municipalities. There's a lot of conforming language in this bill just because everywhere it says tobacco, we have to add or other tobacco or electronic product. So you'll see throughout the bill a couple dozen places where there's the addition of other electronic product to other descriptions of what we're doing regarding tobacco. It's just a lot of conforming language. Likewise, Section 4 references the new definition that's in Section 13. Section 13 is the definition Representative Ledoux referred to earlier, and we'll get to that in a slide or two. Why do I keep doing that? Section 5 is the tax itself. The additional levy goes from 62 mils to 112 mils. In the presentation, we referred to that as going from 6.2 cents to 11.2 cents. A mil is, of course, a tenth of a cent. Section 6 is the increase on the other tobacco products, going from 75% of wholesale to 100%. And within that list of what is taxed, we add the reference to electronic products so that we can now be taxing them as well under the so-called O2P paradigm. Section 7 is conforming language referring to federal tax exemptions. We're adding electronic products to that. Section 8 is when you get a license, the taxpayers have a license with the Department of Revenue. We're adding the electronic products to that. Section 9 references the requirement to file a monthly tax return. We're adding electronic products to that, and also adding the language to conform with the fact that we're requiring that monthly filing to occur electronically. Section 2 adds the electronic products to the procedures for issuing credits and refunds, which often happens if people, Mr. Spanos could probably speak better than I could over why we pay refunds and credits on tobacco products, and we can go there if you like. Section 11 is there's a statutory requirement to keep records in case we do need to investigate you or audit you. That requirement to keep your records is extended to electronic products. Section 12 is the clarification I referenced earlier that a cessation product, tobacco dependence product, or a modified risk tobacco product, these are all legal definitions elsewhere, are excluded from the tax if in fact it could be declared that those fit that definition. Section 13 is a definition of wholesale price that exists in statute now. We are cleaning that up. That is a little bit external to the tax increase bill before you. That is cleanup language related to issues we've gone through over the past and appeals and legal issues that we've had with our taxpayers, defining what is the appropriate wholesale price. Our appeals group has come up with a relatively tight definition that is held up. We are trying to now conform the statute with the language as it's evolved in practice. Section 14 is the new definition of electronic smoking product that we discussed earlier in this hearing. Section 15, now we're getting applicability that says the tax applies to products sold after the effective date and then to the first monthly tax return. This is a monthly tax after the first full month after the effective date. So should this tax take effect on July 1st of this year, the product sold in July would be payable at the higher rate, and then the first tax return paid in August based on July sales would be at the new higher rate. Section 16 allows us at the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations. Section 17 makes Chapter 16 immediately effective so that we could write any necessary regulations right away before the effective date of the other parts of the bill. And, of course, Section 18 is the underlying effective date, July 1st, 2016, when we expect the taxes to increase. That is the end of our presentation, and I am happy to answer any more questions.
Fiscal note, or notes.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I don't have this in front of me at that moment. If I could just take a pause for a moment and grab one from the hallway, I'd be happy to speak to it.
At ease.
On the record, my name is still Ken Alper. I'm still the director of the tax division. You have before you the fiscal note. You'll notice on the bottom line of page one the estimated revenue. The number $29 million is what was in the big spreadsheet of all the governor's fiscal package for FY17. Mm-hmm. You will notice that number decreasing slightly between 2018 and 2022. That reflects our economics team's modeling of reduced tobacco consumption from year to year, which continues an ongoing trend. We've been selling less tobacco in Alaska for a number of years now and expect that to diminish, so to continue. So by FY22, instead of $29 million, we see only $26.4 million of additional revenue. You see the supplemental cost, the one-time cost of $50,000. When you get to page two of the bill, the table...
Based upon what the chairman said about what happened in New York when they raised taxes, I'm wondering whether we actually have seen a decrease in tobacco purchases or whether we've actually only seen a decrease in tobacco purchases in which the state is able to get a percentage.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is an excellent question. Because national consumption trends are down as well, I would presume that ours are tracking relatively consistent with that, but it's something we will investigate and we'll get back to the committee with.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Mr. Upper, through the chair, I saw in an attachment that from the Tax Foundation, which opposes this legislation generally, it must be on basis. At page 4, there's a table. It says 2013 cigarette tax rate smuggling percentages. We're fourth from the bottom nationally. New York is first. I assume that's because we're not contiguous to anything much except Yukon and British Columbia. And is that a fair assumption? New York is right at the top, just as you surmised it might be. Alaska is, incidentally, beneath Alaska is Hawaii, which is pretty remote. North Carolina, oddly enough, is lower than Hawaii. Right. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, not having the table in front of me, I'm not sure if it's in volume or percentage of the volume, if you know what I mean. New York State is obviously a high population state, mm-hmm. and that's going to influence its position. It also is in a densely populated corridor bordering other states. There are other options to purchase lower tax cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, I grew up in New Jersey where clothing wasn't taxed on the sales tax, and a lot of New York people came to use our malls and buy clothing. Mm-hmm. So I imagine similar behaviors exist for tobacco. Alaska does not have the borders, and Hawaii, in addition to not having the borders, has a agricultural inspection process when you enter the state. They want to make sure you're not bringing in any bugs that's going to damage their unique agriculture that they have, and I'm sure that creates something of a deterrent. So to the extent they know about the smuggling, the immediate follow-up to that data is, well, those are just the ones that got caught. But one has to assume that the ones that got caught are relatively proportional throughout the country.
I have to ask, how much approximately in the last 3 to 5 years have you recovered off people that have been caught bringing them in, you know, by mail? For the funds that you've generated, are we talking 100,000, 150,000, or?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to Mr. Spanos on that. He should be able to have a better sense of those numbers.
Yeah, we can wait till next week, but if we could have a breakdown on roughly the, say, the last 5 years.
He may have something off the top of his head, and then we'll get you better data to follow up.
Sure. Mr. Spanos?
Yes, again, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director, Tax Division. It's actually been a few years since we've done any of those, since a lot of the industry has moved overseas. We used to see a lot of the online sales in the States. A lot of that was prosecuted, and most of those moved overseas. We haven't received data in a few years, so we'll have to get back to you on those exact numbers and when we saw those.
Oh, thanks. Representative Hughes.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I was just thinking about that $29 million. When you look at the overall picture, it's a pretty small amount, and Representative Ledoux made the comment that it's quite the regressive tax, and just wondering if the legislature were to find $20 million in reductions, would this be one of the first ones that the administration would rather not go through because it is regressive? I'm thinking of families, just thinking that extra money a month might otherwise be going to buy fruit for the children or sports fees or something like that. I'm just concerned about the regressive nature. Is this, if we found $29 million in cuts, would the administration pull this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I'm in no position to prioritize or say where the administration is going to go and what bill they're prepared to relinquish in exchange for what. This is something of a regressive tax. Some of the other taxes are more progressive in nature. There's something of a mix. The intent was to have a broad range of options, and in total, the intent is to try to equitably reach into everybody's pocket to a fair amount to try to solve the underlying problem of having a $3.5 billion deficit. You are correct. This is a regressive tax. It affects the people who are the least educated and have at the lowest socioeconomic levels for the most part, by no means exclusively. There's people at every income level that smoke. There's people at every level of society that smoke, some more than others. What's interesting about tobacco as opposed to, say, alcohol is that there's relative uniformity in the price of the product. Talking of cigarettes, I mean, maybe the retail price of a pack of cigarettes in Juneau might be anywhere from $9 to $12, but it's not like alcohol where you can, you know, the same excise tax on a $100 bottle of scotch is applied to a $6 bottle of the cheapest product in the store. So that creates that flattens the tax a little bit. The alcohol tax is a little bit more regressive because it's a smaller percentage of the more expensive products.
Follow up?
What follow-up comments?
Both.
My staff just was working with some sheets coming across executive leadership salaries and all the people making over $145,000 a year in the administration. And if you take those making over $145,000 a year, it totals about $60 million. So I just throw that out there in regard to this $29 million, the bulk of it coming from maybe people that, I mean, I don't like smoking. You know, I don't like to be around smoke. I know it's not healthy. I'm sure Dr. Butler will tell us how it impacts health status. But I am concerned about particularly the children that might do without something else that might be a healthy, good thing by taking this money from those families. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, certainly. I represent Josephson.
Relative to Representative Hughes's questions,
this is a tax on alcohol. So these and sorry, alcohol and tobacco. This is the governor's plan. So these parents who would have been spending money on something productive for their children have already made the decision to sort of go the other way, it sounds like. Is that fair? Even though, mind you, I like a good glass of Chardonnay. I don't deny it. This is a tax on something that is already bad. They're already making a decision that some might argue is contrary to their children's best interest. Some might make that argument.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I thank you for saying that. I don't want to get in. I mean, it's the committee's role to debate amongst yourselves, but you are correct that whereas we're increasing the price of a pack of cigarettes, let's say from $9 to $10, that person does have the right to save the whole $9 and just not smoke in the first place.
But again, we're talking about an addictive product.
Without question, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much. Dr. Butler, do you want to enlighten us? You've got a perspective that we haven't had yet on this or alcohol or any of the so-called sin taxes.
All right. For the record, this is Jay Butler, Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health and Social Services. Mr. Chairman, that is a very tall order, but I will do my best. I won't spend any time talking about adverse health effects of cigarette smoking because I think everyone is well aware. In terms of the impact of the tax on health overall and on rates of smoking, the current trend is about a 3.7% a year decline in smoking rates in Alaska. Based on experience in other states, we would expect that this increase would result in an additional 7.4% over a two-year period. So these are percentages that are on already relatively low rates of smoking. So it's not huge numbers, but it's all significant. When we look at then how that translates into medical expenditures, if we focus just on state proportion of Medicaid spending, about 15% of which we think is related to smoking diseases caused by smoking, that would then calculate out to about $6.5 million in Medicaid expenditure savings to the state for that decrease that would be sustained after that two-year additional decrease. And I could probably graph it out better, but the bottom line is we would see some savings. And I think there's also an important point of how it relates to, is this a regressive tax or not? And I think it's absolutely true that it is a regressive tax in that people who are of lower socioeconomic status, lower educational attainment, have the highest rates of cigarette smoking. So that's
that could be geographical as well in Alaska, couldn't it?
I beg your pardon?
That could be geographical as well.
Yes, and we have higher rates in the western parts of the state and on the North Slope as well. It also, though, highlights why it's in some ways also a user fee, because we're all putting into what it costs for people to smoke, whether we smoke or not. The other side of that also is, and I think this is almost more of a philosophical discussion, is how do we define an addiction? And certainly I think a number of people in Alaska, as we've struggled with opioid addiction, heroin addiction, have been reading, looking at some of the philosophy, for instance, of Gabor Mate in Vancouver, who defines an addiction as something, whether it's heroin or whatever, that we do to such an extent that it begins to compromise our relationships with other people and how we're able to take care of ourselves. So when we start talking about whether or not cigarette smoking then is a decision of, if the price goes up, well, then I'm not going to feed my kids, you know, that's really setting a fitting that definition of an addiction. So I think we have to ask ourselves is, what's the advantage here? Are we enabling an addiction that ultimately hurts other people, or are we potentially providing an additional driver for people to stop smoking, particularly those who are of lower socioeconomic status who might be more price sensitive? And I'm just offering that as an alternative model of how to think of this. I'm not saying one is right or the other. I did want to comment also on e-cigarettes. I think the discussion has been very robust because there's a lot that we don't know. The original concept of an e-cigarette is more than 50 years old, and I'm sure you're going to be hearing that some more. But what we consider as a modern e-cigarette has only existed for a little more than a decade. It was developed in China. And really high rates, relatively high rates, or common use of the modern e-cigarette in the United States has only been for about 5 years. So there's a lot that we don't know about the long-term effects. So we're really at this point where it's not real clear what's the harm reduction benefit in terms of this being safer than a combustible cigarette versus what is the inherent risk in the e-cigarette itself, because we don't have 25 years experience with thousands of people who vaped for that period of time. It is interesting that part of the approval process in England included a statement that, e-cigarettes are 95% safer than combustible cigarettes, and I'm not sure sort of what that's based on. Does that mean if a cigarette smoker's risk of smoking-related death is 50%, that it's only a 2.5% risk of vaping-related death if you vape? I don't understand what that number means or quite how it can be calculated, given how little epidemiological data we have at that time, at this time. So that is a struggle, and certainly we are all familiar with anecdotes of people who have struggled to quit smoking and were not able to do so until they used e-cigarettes. I don't know many instances where people then have gotten away from using nicotine by weaning off of e-cigarettes. It certainly is a plausible theory, and maybe we'll hear some reports from people on that. The last thing I was going to say about e-cigarettes, I'm aware of three other states that currently tax the product. Probably what's closest to what's being proposed in House Bill 304 is in Minnesota, where it is a tax that is at 95% of the wholesale value. North Carolina, interestingly, and Louisiana, I believe it is, tax the fluid based on either the volume or the nicotine content.
That's certainly helpful. I take a lot of insurance publications and risk management publications, and I've noticed in the last few months several articles on the fact that they don't have all the kinks out of the device, that they've caught several people on fire, or they've started fires just laying out and having a short in the battery, the land battery, whatever they have. Are you aware of anybody in Alaska that's been injured by an e-cig or had a fire start?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not. I would caution those are sort of spectacular events that seem to capture the headlines and make some pretty gruesome internet pictures. I think those are fairly rare events, so I would caution against passing judgment on cigarettes based on
those. It was coming out of an insurance trade rags or publication, not
understood.
New York newspapers. Oh, we got lots of questions. Representative Hughes, followed by Representative Tilton, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Just wondering if you could, if you know the overlap between the smoking population and Medicaid. And you mentioned something about a user fee. Now, none of this is going back into, some's going to schools to try to teach kids to make good choices, but I've also understand that the use of the vapes is up among the youth, although I know there's a bill in play right now in the legislature to set the restrictions on that for minors. But just wondering that overlap between Medicaid and smoker population, and if had there been any thought maybe to funneling the tax dollars to really direct it to the work of the state in regard to the health care of these people that are caught, that have heart disease and lung cancer and things that are caused by the smoking.
Yes. Representative Hughes, through the chair, I think what you're proposing makes a lot of sense in terms of looking at the considering the rates of smoking among Medicaid beneficiaries, because we know they will be those beneficiaries will be of lower socioeconomic status. That is where we have higher rates of cigarette smoking. I don't know the exact proportion of Medicaid beneficiaries who smoke, if that is your question. Regarding the question about any of these tax monies being directed specifically to treatment of smoking-related diseases among Medicaid beneficiaries, that's a concept, although I think maybe a better approach would be to look at how we might use these funds as a prevention tool so that people don't begin smoking to begin with, or towards cessation activities so that perhaps they could stop smoking before they're at the point of needing medical care.
And a follow-up to that. Right now, the cessation, the portion of the tax that goes to cessation, that's just for school age, right? It's not being used for prevention or anything for adults, is it? I can't remember the slide, but it seemed like it was related to school age, maybe.
Yeah. Representative Hughes, through the chair, there's the school fund, which I believe goes to the Department of Education, but please don't hold me to that. And then there's the separate tobacco use education and cessation fund, which supports more of the direct services for cessation through Department of Health and Social Services. Mm-hmm.
Follow-up to that. And just for clarification, so that's not that portion is not just for school age, and it's for all Alaskans? The cessation education is for all ages?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, yes.
Okay,
thank you. That's my understanding.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And forgive me, you may have covered this. I had to step out for just a moment. But you were talking about addiction, and if you're looking at addiction, and then you use that there might be people, if you're talking about smoking as an addiction, and then you're talking about there may be people who are price sensitive, and my question is do we find people with addictions to be price sensitive, or do we look at moving their budgetary money from one area to pay for the addiction area?
Representative Tilton, through the chair, that is an excellent question. I have to say it's you're getting way beyond my level of expertise, but I will say it is clear that economics relate to is an important driver in addiction. Certainly one of the drivers in the increased use of heroin is not just the background of prescription opioid use, but also the infusion of cheaper, higher quality heroin. So determining a price point, I use the term, yes, defining just what that is, I suspect that's going to be variable from person to person.
Representative Liddell.
Well, I was just thinking, if the justification of these so-called sin taxes, alcohol, tobacco, etc., is because somehow or other society has decided that these products aren't good for us and therefore it's okay to tax them. I mean, one of the biggest problems we've got in this state is obesity. I mean, why aren't we taxing M&Ms, candy canes, donuts, you know, junk food? I mean, why aren't they considered sin foods?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, Ken Alper, again, Tax Division. I'm hoping that was a somewhat rhetorical question. The governor's package, with a couple of limited exceptions, are adjusting existing taxes. We're not suggesting any new ones. We get comments from the general public like that, ideas. We've even modeled some of those things. If you want to know what a sugared soda tax could raise in Alaska, I could actually tell you, because we have the data.
That's $6 million, isn't it?
Well, 21 million, Mr. Chair. Yeah. That's a penny an ounce on sugared soft drinks. And how curious the diversion factor to diet soft drinks might be, and we've never really seen differential prices between regular Coke and Diet Coke. And what we could do a lot of things. the governor chose to do the things that are before us today, and we're not talking about taxing donuts or M&Ms, although the jokes just write themselves, don't
they? Or bagels.
Yeah.
Follow up? New question?
Nope. Nope.
Well, I think on this point, this looks like a good place to break. I'm going to hold public testimony open. We're going to begin next week. I'd like to thank everybody. In fact, if there are any questions for Mr. Spanos, he's probably still online if anybody has a last question for him. I would encourage anybody who's listening in that cares to testify to also submit written testimony so it can become part of the permanent record, and that would go to hlac@akleg.gov. And with that, we will adjourn at 20 minutes to 5.